We've got another Speaking of Schools for you today. Welcome. I'm Doug Keel. The South Carolina Department of Education brings you Speaking of Schools, a podcast you'll find at this website each week. We're more than happy to be here with you, and today we're going to be revisiting the May Carolina Classrooms presentation from South Carolina Educational Television. In case you missed that production, it is still available. You can see it if you'll go to scetv.org/education. But in case you don't have an opportunity to do that, we have the audio portion of that today on Speaking of Schools. Dawn Samples is the host for Carolina Classrooms. Her guest is Ruta Kuwei of the South Carolina Department of Education. The subject is language immersion, which is second language education as well as other subjects pertaining to that second language. Glad you're with us. Join us for the conversation with Dawn Samples and Ruta Kuwei. Language immersion, our topic today, as we're speaking of schools.
Bonjour, buenos dias, ni hao, hallo. Hello, and welcome to Carolina Classrooms. I'm Dawn Samples. Our topic today is language immersion, a form of second language education where students not only learn to understand and speak the language, but they also receive instruction in other subjects in the language as well. This is a topic that I'm very familiar with, as I am the coordinator for World Languages and Partial Immersion for Lexington School District 1. Joining me today is Ruta Kuwei from the Office of Standards and Learning, Division of College and Career Readiness at the South Carolina Department of Education. Welcome, Ruta.
Thank you.
So, Ruta, do you want to tell us a little bit about what your role is as the World Language Supervisor in South Carolina?
Certainly. The Office of Standards and Learning, their mission really is to write standards in different content areas and to support teachers in implementing them. And so as such, that's part of, certainly a big part of my responsibility. But I also coordinate or help provide technical assistance to anybody in the state for any type of program. So, of course, immersion programs are one of those. They could be middle school programs. They could be international baccalaureate. Could be assessment issues. It's really a very wide range of possibilities.
So it could be anything at all that has to do with world language learning in South Carolina.
So even though we are a local control state where districts really make their own decisions, we provide services free of charge, of course, and we help brainstorm the different options that might be available to districts.
Great. So we've already learned just a little bit in the beginning about what the idea of immersion is. Talk to us a little bit in more detail about what immersion is and what it looks like in practice.
Well, immersion is one of those programs that usually starts in elementary, but I think many people think that it only is an elementary program. It really isn't. It's a program in which students will learn not just the language, but will learn other subject areas in the language. So it could be math, could be social studies, could be science, physical education, art, music, really anything. And there are different models. In South Carolina, we generally have what we call a 50-50 model. So 50% of instructional time is devoted in learning, let's say, math and science, just as an example, in the target language. And then the other part of the day, students will learn the English language arts or whatever in English. So there is quite a bit of coordination between the immersion teacher and the English partner teacher so that things work smoothly to the learner's benefit.
And when we talk about 50-50, I know from our experience in Lexington, one of the things that we also have to emphasize with parents is that it's 50% of the instructional day.
That is correct.
Not necessarily 50% of the entire day.
Right. And I think the other important thing to mention as a non-negotiable is that those two languages are really clearly separated. When it's the target language time, it's the target language time, and nobody speaks English during that time. That can be a little frightening to parents in the beginning, but it really does work, and it actually helps the students to really learn the language if the teachers are doing what they're supposed to be doing and giving them lots of support.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me, when would be the best ideal time for students to begin
their language in an immersion setting?
Well, most programs will start in kindergarten, and that's an ideal time because students are learning what school is all about anyway, as the little ones and as five-year-olds, and that's a perfect time to learn the routines and basic vocabulary. And by the time they get to first grade, they really are prepared to enter the world of literacy, which is what any monolingual child would be doing as well.
Let's take a look and just see what it looks like in the immersion language classroom.
Let's.
¿Qué pasa si la fracción no está en su mínima expresión, Sofía? ¿Qué tienes que hacer? ¿Y qué se hace para simplificar?
El numerador y el denominador.
¿Qué es lo que hacemos aquí, Sofía? ¿Qué es lo que representa un cuarto más un cuarto más un cuarto?
¿Qué
está haciendo la gente? ¿Quién está? ¿Sí?
So, Ruta, one of the things that parents are most interested in when they're considering immersion programs are the benefits. So what are some of the benefits, both short-term and long-term benefits, of having your child be part of an immersion program?
Well, the most obvious benefit is that they will, any child that goes through the entire program, K-5 and beyond, will achieve a high level of proficiency. In our business, that means that they really can interact, read, write at a high level. They're going to learn math and science and social studies no matter what. So that's usually not the primary reason that parents select an immersion program. But there are other benefits as well. Generally, students who are in immersion do perform as well as their monolingual peers, oftentimes better. They have better memory, they are more creative, they are very good at problem solving, they eventually do learn a lot about the culture of the countries that they're, whose languages they're learning, and that really leads to intercultural communicative competence, which is really a big buzzword these days. We hear about global competency, and it's more than just knowing a language. It's knowing how to interact with people from other countries.
Mm-hmm. So the benefits really go far beyond just being able to speak another language.
Absolutely.
But really being able to have different perspectives on the world, on interacting with each other. I know one of the things that I think I've noticed happening more and more in the last few years is a lot of research that's coming out about all of the brain benefits of just having that your brain manipulating two languages at once. There's a lot of physical and physiological benefits as well that mm-hmm. many people put their children in programs before we even knew about a lot of
right.
those benefits.
But and just like physical exercise makes tones your muscles, this mental gymnastics does the same thing for the brain. And mm-hmm. the, you know, what separates us from animals is our ability to have language. And language is one of the most complex human endeavors. And so to be able to do that on two levels really gives the brain mm-hmm. a workout. And students, you know, they build all these synapses, and it's a beautiful thing.
Ruta, one of my favorite things when I go into classrooms is to hear little voices speaking different languages. It just makes my heart melt. So I'd love for our viewers to get a chance to see just what that sounds like and feels like by getting a bird's eye view of immersion at the elementary level.
Hello, hello. Turn us to the best. Hello.
Immersion is a magical world. The children that are in my class right now came to me, my kindergartners came to me 167 days ago, and they didn't know one word. I mean, maybe two or three of them could say Guten Morgen, which would be hello in German. And the fact that now, you know, 2.5 hours of their school day is done completely in another language is just magic. Teaching, you know, 5 and 6 year olds, they have very, very short attention span, and you're also teaching them in another language with absolutely no English, none of their home language. So keeping them engaged, but also making the learning relevant and comprehensible to them is the biggest challenge.
Schüssel von der Waage oder in mein Becher, Taylor?
Schüssel. Immersion works. Immersion. It's just this magical world where the children, all the fears that we as adults have about something different and learning something different, they don't exist there for the children. And their brains are sponges, and it's just magic.
It also helps in learning other languages down the road as well.
Yes, I think the most difficult, if we can say difficult language, is the first one that you learn, and then there's a lot of transfer. Even in languages that don't have a Roman alphabet, students learn how to learn, and they learn that metacognitive process about what are the strategies that I need to use to understand if it's someone speaking, or how do I improve when I'm writing. And if you can do it in one language, you can do it in another and another and another. So there really is quite a bit of transfer.
And one thing that we've noticed in our students in Lexington, and that I've also had parents comment on, is that there's also transfer from not just learning yet a third or fourth language, but even to other content areas. The way that they process information is just different.
I think students that learn in two languages are more tolerant of ambiguity, mm-hmm. and they're a little more patient because they know that eventually they'll get it, because they're used to maybe not understanding it quite the first time. Mm-hmm. I think you and I have both had experiences with our own children where they have learned in another language, and it really has given very long-term benefits to our children.
Exactly. How might a parent determine if an immersion program or the immersion language setting is a good fit for their child?
Well, I think the research seems to indicate that most children are good candidates for immersion. Obviously, if any parent has any qualms or misgivings about putting in a child, their child in immersion, they really should sit down with the world language professionals at their school, and if need be, with other professionals. It could be a special ed person or a speech pathologist. But by and large, we see that even students who we have the whole spectrum. We have them from very average students, below average, all the way to the gifted and talented, and most of them do very well. And parents who are reluctant maybe to keep their children in immersion might say, well, they'll do better or have more success if we take away the language element. But the research really doesn't support that. And in most cases, it you know, as we said earlier, the brain is, you're taking away more gymnastics for the brain. So in most cases, it's a good idea to keep the child in immersion.
Mm-hmm. So middle schoolers are a whole different ball of wax than little kindergartners in immersion, but they are a lot of fun, and they can really start to do some meaningful, fun, communicative things at the middle school level. And a lot of middle school teachers have really gone a long way to do some exciting things with our middle school students. So let's take a look and see what that looks like.
Bienvenue au Collège de Meadowglen.
Right now we're studying Quebec and how their culture is different and their style of language is different from French, and when like different words and different phrases mean different things, and how their interpretation of the language is different.
Et la population est Sans parents, mille de son cache, et l'empereur officiel est anglais.
Je veux faire beaucoup de. Visiter le monde, et quand je visite le monde, je peux utiliser le français ou les différents. I want to travel when I get older, so I can definitely use it whenever I'm traveling, like, to different places. Probably getting to, like, learn a new language is kind of cool, and then I also get to, like, because of French in, like, my passport classes, I get to learn about other places that speak French, and I can learn about cultures in different places, too, which is really cool.
Avec la sauce, et les frites, et les fromages.
C'est
incroyable.
Just studying the French helps us understand French as a language, but also that there are a lot of different cultures in our world besides just ours that we're so used to. So I think it helps us understand and in multiple ways different people.
One of the questions that we frequently get is about testing. Testing and standardized testing is a big topic of conversation anyway. Talk to me about what that looks like in the immersion classroom.
Well, it seems to be counterintuitive to parents that children will learn, let's say, math in whatever language, and then they're going to take standardized state tests in English, for example. And the research, not just in South Carolina, but throughout the country and beyond, actually, because Canada certainly has more than 30 years of data on this, shows that not only do these children do well, they often do better. Now, that's not to say that there's no preparation for these standardized tests. This is where the cooperation between the English partner teacher and the immersion teacher is key, because the concepts and the content the children know, what labels you put on them may be different. So it's really a question of just learning the new vocabulary. But children do very well. I would say, and I'm sure this is the case in your district, that most of the time students are tested in the target language. But for the big testing, they get familiarized with the new vocabulary, and it seems to work very, very well.
Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of also, I think, the parents and the teachers working together.
Right.
I know one thing we really recommend to parents is to read to their kids in English and allow their kids to read topics or books, or be it fiction or nonfiction, around the different content that they're learning, so that they're getting that vocabulary input in English as well as in the language in the classroom.
I think that's one of the basic principles of literacy in any language, that parents read. And if you're not a parent who knows the language, it doesn't matter. Let your child read to you in the target language and be attentive and be happy that they're doing so. But nothing replaces reading in your native language, which for most parents might be English, but in our state it could be other languages as well.
Mm-hmm. So if a parent puts their child into kindergarten, for many parents it's their first child going into school, and it's a big moment. Your kid's going to school, big school, and that already is going to be a big adjustment. Kindergarten in and of itself is a big adjustment for kids.
Certainly.
Anyway, so what might parents expect their kids to come home having experienced when they start in an immersion program?
Well, most of our programs in South Carolina, as I said earlier, are, 50-50. So either the beginning of their morning will be in the target language, or their afternoon. But most immersion programs are very careful to rotate that so that children aren't always exposed to the morning or the afternoon, because some children are morning people, just like adults, and others are not. Some schools will do that on a quarterly basis, some will do it on a weekly basis. So I think that should allay some fears. But basically, children are going to be doing what they would be doing in a regular kindergarten class. And most teachers, not just kindergarten teachers, but particularly kindergarten teachers, are very good about sending home weekly newsletters and explaining exactly what they're learning. We have heard many funny stories from parents who insist on, asking their children what's different about it, and students will say, just another day at school. So that's a good answer. That means they're very, very comfortable in the setting.
Well, and they really don't know anything different.
Right.
That is all they've ever known for kindergarten. I know my own daughter, I think, was in second grade before she realized that not everyone had a day like her day. She was like, do you know these other kids don't have half a day in the language? That's not right. So when parents put their child on this program, I think it might also be helpful for them to know that kindergarten is exhausting for any kindergartner.
Indeed.
But their little brains, like you were saying, are doing gymnastics all day, and they're going to be really tired and really challenged right. in the beginning. But they'll build up endurance, and they will build up skills and strategies for working through that day. And I know some of our parents have said that the kids come home and they say, that lady was talking weird all day, Mama. And they didn't understand at first, but they understand more than they realize they're understanding, I think.
I think parents sometimes like to put their children on the spot, and they say, well, tell me something in Spanish or French. And children tend to freeze when you say that. So I would caution parents to not ask those very specific questions, but mm-hmm. say, well, you know, what was your day like? What did you learn? The general questions. And over time, I mean, language is very contextualized. So if they were learning about colors, that's what they're going to want to talk about. They're not going to want to just randomly express something in another language. So I would caution parents not to and not to let them think that they're not learning anything. They are. It's just not the way they heard it that day in school, so it might be a little troublesome for them.
And the teachers can give them guidance as
Absolutely.
To what kinds of questions to ask that will contextualize it
right.
for the kids, too.
Exactly.
That's a good way. One question we get a lot, too, is how can I help my child if I don't speak the language? That's a big concern that parents
of
have
course.
Sometimes.
And that's a legitimate concern. Again, I would always take my cues from the teacher. And the teacher will always, most teachers will have a weekly plan, so you have an idea of what students are working on. And there's no reason why you can't help them in English, let's say if it's a math problem. I wouldn't certainly read to them in the target language if it was something that I was not proficient in. But I think we should let our children show us what they want to do and what they need rather than directing. I think that's good advice for any parent. We don't need to be doing their homework for them, but we need to be listening to them, and we need mm-hmm. to be supportive and excited about what they're learning. I think that's probably one of the most important things about immersion, that if you are anxious as a parent, you're going to transfer that anxiety to your
right.
child, and unnecessarily, because kids are very resilient. They just are.
So I would love for our viewers to get a chance to see what these kids look like at the high school level and to hear a little bit of their own reflections and their own thoughts about what their experience has been with immersion. So let's take a look at that now.
I think probably the most rewarding experience was when we took a trip to Puerto Rico. When I was in the sixth grade, I had studied Spanish for about 7 years at the time. We'd always learned about this whole, like, there's another side of the world that speaks Spanish, but we had never actually gone out and seen it. So to have learned about this language and this culture for so long, and then to actually go out and see it was a really amazing experience. All of the things that we had learned and all of the language and culture that we had worked on for so long just all came full circle. I think the most interesting thing about that trip was it was almost like a knee-jerk reaction. Like, we got off the plane and you were immediately in this whole different culture. And because we'd been learning it for so long, we immediately knew what they were saying. We knew, I could hear the flight instructions in Spanish, and I knew exactly what the instructions were. I think the most rewarding experience was being able to go and see the Spanish-speaking world that I had spent so much time learning about.
They've gained so many skills, not just the language skill. The elementary school teachers did an amazing job with them, and I can't state enough for them what an amazing gift, what an advantage they have over so many other people who have not had the opportunity to go through a program like this one.
I know that immersion, as it grows and evolves, it changes. It doesn't always look the same at elementary school.
For sure.
It may look different at middle school and then again different in high school. So what are some long-term things parents can expect from immersion?
Well, that's a key issue that after K through 5, parents are usually very savvy and they know exactly what to expect. And all of a sudden, they're in middle school and everything changes. And I would venture to argue that probably happens in the monolingual classes as well. But by the time a child comes to middle school, they already have they're very comfortable in the language. And so in a middle school, it will look very different in Lexington, maybe in other districts. But basically, the rule of thumb would be that there is at least one target language arts class and another content area. And the content area might be social studies in one district. It might be math in another. It might be science in another. It might be the same thing that they did in elementary school, but at a different level. So what
it could be related arts.
It could be related arts. It could be music, art, PE, who knows? What counts is that the children are still learning in another language and at a higher level. And in high school, generally speaking, in middle school, we probably have two courses. In a high school, it might only be one.
We have high school state graduation requirements.
That's exactly right.
That are a little more difficult to wiggle around.
Right. And so it depends on the availability. In one school, you might have a teacher that can do theater in the target language. In another school, it might be science. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And it doesn't really matter what the content is. Again, it's the academic vocabulary and the concepts that are going through the medium of the language is what makes that brain work so hard. It's the rigor.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I know. The goal, I think, for us certainly in Lexington is for our students as they reach high school to have reached a level of proficiency that will prepare them to really be able to go to college or to do something where the language is a part of how they just function and operate and is a part of them and how they identify with who they are.
Exactly.
Thank you, Ruta, for joining us today. And thank you, viewers, for joining us as well.
And there you have it, this week's podcast, a repeat of the May Carolina Classrooms. And once again, if you'd like to see this video, it's archived there at the SCETV website. Just go to scetv.org/education. And you can find the Carolina Classrooms for the month of May, the topic on language immersion. I'm Doug Keel, and that's today's podcast, Speaking of Schools. And we, of course, from South Carolina's Department of Education, come to you each week, and we'll be here throughout the summer months with news pertaining to education in the Palmetto State. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back again next week, once again, Speaking of Schools.